You're listening to Stateside from Michigan Radio. I'm Cynthia Canty. 40 years ago this month, Richard Nixon resigned the presidency in disgrace, and Michigan's Gerald Ford became the first president never to have been elected president or vice president. What kind of president was he? Reviews are mixed. Patrick McLean is director of the Gerald R. Ford Institute for Leadership in Public Policy and Service at Albion College. Welcome, Patrick.
Hi, Cindy. Good to be with you.
Good to have you with us. And returning to Stateside is Gleaves Whitney, who's director of Grand Valley State University's Hauenstein Center for Presidential Studies. Hello, Gleaves.
Hi, Cynthia.
Patrick, a 2012 Gallup poll found that Americans judged Gerald Ford overwhelmingly as not good, not bad, very average. In fact, 54% of us did. But your recent piece in Bridge Magazine challenges that view. Why do you believe we need to truly appreciate Gerald Ford's leadership?
I think we look at the hand that Gerald Ford was dealt, for starters. One could hardly get a worse way to start a presidency. There was a war going on in Vietnam that was highly unpopular. There was the beginning of stagflation, a stagnant economy, there were high unemployment, low job growth. And he came in at a time when people were, a large segment of the population was calling for the former president's head. And that was just dominating his agenda, his press conferences and anything he was doing early on in his conversation as president was really taking a back seat to the whole issue of the pardon. And so one of the things that I proposed in my piece is that we should really be looking at what he did to heal the country, his efforts to look at the whole issue of the pardon and say, what can we do as a country that will move us beyond this issue? And he did it, and he did it at great political cost to himself. His poll numbers plummeted immediately after he did that. He was somewhere in the 70s in his first month as far as approval ratings, and soon after the pardon, he was down in the 40s. And in some ways, he never recovered from that. But I think in hindsight, after these 40 years, we look at what he did, and I think a lot of people, including those like Ted Kennedy, who at the time said that it was a mistake to pardon Nixon. He came back and said, you know what, it was the right thing to do. And the Kennedy family ultimately gave Ford a Profiles in Courage Award.
I'm going to ask both of you what the Gallup organization asked Americans. So I'll start with you, Patrick. Where would you place Gerald Ford on that spectrum? They gave people a choice of outstanding, above average, average, below average, and poor. Patrick, where would you put Gerald Ford?
Above average.
Gleaves?
I would, too, above average.
And why?
I think that President Ford will rise as time goes on in the polls. I think that as we get more and more perspective on who he was as a person, the integrity he brought to the office, and as we have more experience with presidents, you know, as we see presidents 39, 40, 41, 42, and so forth, I think we're going to see that Ford brought an integrity and a calmness to the presidency that we really miss. Ford's integrity really stands out. Patrick did a great job laying out all the different ways that President Ford was truly an above-average president. I look at his courage. Here's a man who had the integrity to be in the office, but he also had the courage to act on his convictions. It was courageous for him to pardon President Nixon. It was not just something that he was able to do, you know, sort of lightheartedly to get this issue behind him. That August 28, 1974 press conference was filled with questions. What's going to happen to Nixon? What's your disposition regarding going forward with Nixon? And Ford realized that to save the conversation in Washington and the national conversation we were having, to heal the nation so that the country would once again trust Washington, trust the president to do the right thing, Ford knew he had to get Nixon off the table so that he could attack cleaning up the mess in Vietnam. You know, we were technically getting out of Vietnam at that time, but still the war was pressuring the President of the United States as Commander-in-Chief, the economic problems we had, energy crises that were starting to loom. Ford had so many things he wanted to tackle. And by getting Nixon off the agenda, at least in the short term, he was able to attack these other things. That takes integrity. He did not use that politically. As Patrick rightly pointed out, President Ford's numbers in the Gallup poll in mid-August stood at 71% approval. overnight, the most dramatic drop in Gallup polling ever for a president's approval rating was experienced by President Ford as he dropped to 49%. And Ford just said, you know what, I'm willing to. Tip O'Neill told him, you know, the Speaker of the House, he said, if you do this, you will never recover. You will not be elected if you want to run in 76. And Ford understood the consequences, but he had the integrity to do the right thing. And that's the kind of thing I think Americans are looking back on now. So when we look at the above average rating that Patrick and I would give President Ford today, I think with time, that will solidify in the American public. We'll recognize that Ford was the right man at the right time for that job, not the kind of guy with a lot of flash and sizzle, but with that core, that inner core of integrity and courage to do the right thing.
Well, I will say, even just based on some of the articles that I found in research and also reading comments from readers to your piece in Bridge, Patrick McLean, that there are people today who still strongly believe that that pardon was less about healing and more about trying to protect the GOP and make sure that let's get this issue off the table so Republicans wouldn't lose big in upcoming congressional and state elections. And they believe it proved that the big fish like Nixon skate and the little fish like Chuck Colson and John Ehrlichman go to prison. Is there something to be said for that view? And I'll let you respond first, Patrick, because they were in response to your commentary.
Well, I just don't think they're historically accurate. Think that that it's absolutely the case that President Ford wrestled with this decision and thought about it in a lot of ways. One of the things we haven't talked about yet is just how long we might have been dealing with this issue had the pardon not occurred. And the best guesses that I get is it would make its way through the legal process could be 2-3 years or even beyond, which is even longer than President Ford's term in office. So I think that the reasons that he made, that he granted the pardon, have a lot more to do with his sincerity. And, you know, people have a hard time believing that these days. It's just we live in a terribly cynical age.
What do you think, Leaves?
I think that the country struggled with it. And we know, for example, right after the pardon that Bella Abzug suggested just the line of thinking that you're suggesting, that she requested a resolution of inquiry, wanting all the information about the pardon that she could get and that her committee could get. And, of course, they thought that there was some secret deal. And Ford agreed to go to the Judiciary Committee's Subcommittee on Criminal Justice. Now, this is unprecedented for a president of the United States, but he knew that he had to go there. And he said, look, I've got nothing to hide. He had over 2 hours of answering questions. The president of the United States before the House Judiciary Committee. Think of how unprecedented that was. But that was his personal commitment to try to put this behind him and say, this is not politics. This is about getting on with the country's business. Now, there's another element to this which is so interesting, and that is there's evidence that a number of people consulted with Ford before he decided on the pardon. There was a pastor, a famous pastor here in Grand Rapids, Duncan Littlefair, who wrote to President Ford and talked about the quality of mercy, especially to a man who, in Nixon's situation, you know, Nixon's health was really bad as well. And do you show mercy in addition to justice? What's the difference between mercy and justice? And when is it appropriate for a commander-in-chief, a president of the United States, to extend mercy to a fellow human being whose conscience was indeed suffering, who was physically ailing and on the very close to death shortly after this whole episode? So Ford just thought this is the right thing to do for the country, and there's a quality of mercy to show to another human being.
We are looking at the legacy of Michigan's only president, Gerald Ford. He took office 40 years ago this month. Patrick McLean directs the Gerald R. Ford Institute for Leadership in Public Policy and Service. He's at Albion College. And we've got Gleaves Whitney with us. He directs the Hauenstein Center for Presidential Studies at Grand Valley State University. Let's talk foreign policy. Particularly, I'm wondering about the Ford administration's decision to get behind and back a Kurdish rebellion against Saddam Hussein because the U.S. wanted to back the Shah of Iran. And then when the Shah made his own peace with Hussein and abandoned the Kurds, the United States pulled away. And there are those who feel that the Ford administration, President Ford and Secretary of State Kissinger, left the Kurds twisting in the wind, and it was shameful. Patrick, what are your thoughts on that decision?
Well, the Kurds have been in history's crosshairs more than one time, and that was a difficult situation. In some ways, they're wondering if they're not facing the same thing right now. You know, I have a hard time looking at these kinds of foreign policy decisions in complete isolation. I think given everything else that was happening at the same time,
there's a larger context here about the Middle East. You're absolutely right. I mean, you had had the Yom Kippur War in 1973, and while that had created a kind of buffer zone in the Sinai, monitored by the United States, there's this larger Middle East problem that Ford inherits, and he became heavily involved in the search for peace in the Middle East, and President Carter, who follows him, is going to be able to take advantage of this. But remember the context that Patrick is getting at here. Our U.S. dependence on foreign oil at that time, much of it was imported from this troubled region. The Kurdish issue, the Iraqi issue with Saddam Hussein, the large Arab exporting nation. There was an Arab embargo launched in retaliation for U.S. support of Israel that President Ford had to deal with. The cost of imported oil had soared from $3 billion in 1970, $3 billion to $25 billion in 1974. Mm. Now, you know the shock that presents to the U.S. economy. These rising energy costs resulted in a domestic recession. Yes, I mean, this is where foreign affairs has a huge impact. We had a recession. We had inflation at the same time. We had high unemployment that was going to go up to 9-10%. That's the larger context that Ford had to keep his eye on. And Patrick's absolutely right. That's the larger thing we had to keep in mind to keep this international tinderbox from exploding.
Since you brought up the economy, let us kind of look at that. And he only had 2.5 years in office. But, Patrick, what were his contributions to correcting our failing economy?
Well, he did a bit of an about-face when he first took office. And there was talk about where the economy was going. And if you read his memoirs, you'll hear him kind of grappling with some of that. His initial efforts were to address inflation with a voluntary program that he called Whip Inflation Now.
And, oh, yeah, when?
went around with the win buttons.
I remember them.
But then it became clear that the economy was even in worse shape than he had realized. One of the kind of open questions that I'd like to research a little bit more is what happened early on in that administration that I wonder how well President Ford was fully briefed, or perhaps it's the nature of economic forecasting and post-diction in some ways at that time, but people did not see any of this coming. But then again, look back at 2007, 2008, people didn't see that coming as quickly as it came either.
Let's remember that President Ford was an economist. He was trained at the University of Michigan. In fact, I talked to him once about this. I said, well, how did that economic background of yours really help in the White House? And he told me, and I believe him, he said, I was the last president who was able to take home the federal budget without any aides carrying it to my house and being able to absorb what was going on just by sitting down in my easy chair and smoking my pipe and reading through the budget. He had that capacity. We know that President Ford was very bright when it came to understanding the economy. But Patrick's right. The collapse of Whip Inflation Now, you have to realize that this voluntary program, the president appeared before Congress and he says, look, there are 10 different areas from farm production to tax credits, energy conservation, where government could help mobilize ordinary people. And we're going to bring about this profound economic change. And believe it or not, 100,000 Americans wrote the White House to enlist and win. But of course, the critics were cynical. Capitol Hill's support collapsed. And Ford was not able to do the things that he wanted because, let's remember, this is when the Democrats are largely in control, both houses of Congress, and so Ford's recommendations really were not going to go anyplace. He did not want to impose further wage and price controls.
Kind of the flip side of the coin we have today, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely the flip side. But remember, that was a time when both inflation and unemployment were rising. We're not used to that anymore. He faced a terrible situation. The first 3 months of his presidency, unemployment was about 5.5% and was going to go up before the election to over 9%. Now, you know how Americans react in their pocketbook issues. We were absolutely sick and tired of dealing with Vietnam and foreign affairs, so we were refocused on our domestic issues. And you can imagine if unemployment practically doubled now, we would just be in an uproar.
I'm wondering why you each think the American public regards Gerald Ford with what, in essence, is a shrug. Is it because he wasn't in office long enough to really make a real mark in people's minds, Patrick?
That's certainly part of it, and now we're getting into a point where, as I'm reminded constantly by my new students who have started a new fall semester, you know, they certainly weren't born when President Ford was around. This is not to them contemporary. This is ancient history, practically. So now it's up to the people that are writing the history books and the people that are reading. He wasn't in office terribly long. So much has been written about the pardon. So I think just the brevity of his time in office is a big part of it, and sort of that link to Nixon and the pardon. And in the economy, that fairly or unfairly, the hand that he was dealt, that's what people may remember as well.
Anything to add to that, Cleaves?
Yes, I think that what really damaged President Ford's reputation was not only the 880 days in office was very, very short, but in addition, Ronald Reagan comes along, challenges him in 1976, really whips up a lot of enthusiasm among more conservative Republicans, and Reagan succeeds in, when he comes back in 1980 and actually wins the presidency, in recasting what the Republican Party is, how it views itself, how it presents itself in the larger American narrative. And I think Ford got lost in that narrative. And Ford was bitter about that. Let's be honest about this. Again, this was an area where my personal interviews with him, I asked him how he responded. Ford made it clear that he did not think he got the credit that he deserved. We haven't talked about Vladivostok, for example, when President Ford met with Brezhnev. And we haven't talked about the Helsinki Accords in foreign affairs, where President Ford was able to get the Soviets to agree to human rights, observe human rights in its orbit. And this, as President Ford used to say, this is what made it possible for dissidents in Eastern Europe to rise up and stand up against the Soviet Union. So that whole foundation of tear down this wall, Mr. Gorbachev, that Reagan, of course, was able to trumpet, the basis for that came out of the Ford administration and the Helsinki Accords. So Ford had a lot of accomplishments. Unfortunately, Reagan rewrote the narrative, and President Ford has been lost a little bit in that rewriting.
A review of the presidency of Gerald Ford of Michigan, who became president 40 years ago this very month. We've been talking with Cleaves Whitney, who directs the Hauenstein Center for Presidential Studies at Grand Valley State University, and with Patrick McLean, who directs the Gerald R. Ford Institute for Leadership in Public Policy and Service at Albion College. Thank you very, very much to both of you for being on Stateside.
Thank you,
Cynthia.